Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hello and welcome to Banging Book Club. I'm Lena Norms.
I'm Lucy Moon.
And I'm Hannah Witten.
This is a fortnightly podcast where we read books about sex and gender and talk about it.
That's right.
Chew
That's
the fat.
We do.
And this Swizzle month. The hay. And this month we have read A Quiet Kind of Thunder by Sarah Bernhard.
Did you say it right? Oh my god.
Nah.
No.
Sarah Bernhard.
Sarah Bernhard.
Sarah.
But it's all good, guys.
Sarah Bernhard.
Sarah Bernhard.
Sorry, Sarah. I've actually met you several times. And it was...
Sarah Bernhard.
No. Sarah Bernhard.
No. let's
How
just...
are we chill with Shaffy
What a
Corsandi
musical name.
And this gets us.
I know.
Should we just call her Sarah?
Sarah.
Yeah. Sarah.
Sarah B.
Sarah B.
Sounds like you're like the sixth Spice Girl.
BB.
To summarise, for those of you who haven't read it, which seems to be quite a lot of people, which is chill, but to catch you all up if you haven't read it, this is a book about Steffi, who is a selective mute. Selective mute means that she really does struggle to speak. She can physically speak, but it is connected to her anxiety. Would that be fair? Is that fair to say, guys?
Yes.
Yeah?
And there's probably a better explanation if you Google it.
Yes.
We, disclaimer, sorry, we don't know.
From what this book has explained to me... That is what I have understood.
This book is selective all I know about mutism as well. I've never encountered it
Which
before.
I'm really glad that's why I read it. She falls in love with a mysterious guy called Reese, who just started at their sixth form. Very exciting. And he can't hear, so they bond over their knowledge of... I was going to say BDSL. BSL, which is British Sign Language, for those of you who don't know. And they go on adventures together.
I think we'll discuss plot elements throughout the podcast.
Yeah.
But that's the basic
I think they manage to teach each other a lot about life. They discover a lot about growing up together. And there's lots of other hilarities that ensue.
Yeah. Sound reviews.
Aww.
That's mine.
Ooh! And that's mine.
It's a fucking playground,
guys. Yeah!
It's young, isn't
that's
it?
What we thought about the relationship. That's nice. It's kind of like seeing two people kissing on a bus that you don't know.
Do you think that's cute? I'm scared of PDA, so for me that's like...
I read Beautiful Broken Things, which was Sarah Bernhard's first release.
Yeah, I read that too.
I loved it.
Loved it.
That deals with very different teenage issues, and I think it is to be talked about that Sarah doesn't have any hearing or speech impediments.
No.
So this was like her looking at somebody else's perspective of something, which I thought was really interesting. But in general, my experience of her as an author is she talks in a very intelligent way, but very accessibly about... lots of hard issues to do with teenage stuff and growing up.
Yeah, because Beautiful Broken Things is a lot about friendship and, like, abuse.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Self-harm, suicide.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That sounds really interesting.
But I think one of the things that Sarah does really well is the teenage voice.
Yes.
And, like, giving teenagers the credit that they deserve in terms of the way that they speak and how intelligent they often are, but also giving them that... you know, that leg room to be teenagers.
I was going to say, this is the first YA we read at book club, which really I identified with the teenage voice as my teenage self.
Okay.
This is the first
with
one where
Steffi?
With Steffi's teenage voice, I really feel like that felt accurate to my experience.
Were you a selective mute?
No.
just felt like I
must confess, no. And anyone who knows me will know I'm...
Okay. What about it then?
The way, you know how Lena really identifies with the way Catelyn Moran writes
Johanna.
I
identify. Like, she's so unrealistic, and I'm like, she's me.
Yeah. In the same way, I feel like I never once questioned this voice. This is like, oh, this is my internal monologue when I was 16.
Oh, really? Wow. Yeah. I feel like I need to find my.
We need to find yours. Yeah.
Hopefully, we'll have a banging book club book.
Well, we are reading your book.
Yeah,
now,
I know.
So
yeah,
I feel like
this is my voice.
You've really overperformed on the representing your own voice and books that we're about to read. So the book plays with lots of ideas of sound and how we perceive that. So the title did become clear what it was about, because I don't know if you guys thought this, but I thought the title was quite confusing until we got about 2/3 of the way through the book, which I don't know is a good choice or a bad choice. I'm just not sure. But now, looking back at this book, I'm going to think fondly of it, because one of the best parts of it was when they talk about the fact that Steffi and Reese fall in love, not like lightning, as her best friend does, but more like thunder, where it's like the slow rolling, like this kind
gradual.
Of like... Yeah, it's like a gradual, very deep, very sincere... rumbling.
Yeah.
I like really like a stomach. That
I love that.
That metaphor like really got to me as well, because the kind of love that Steffi's best friend Tem was describing, like that lightning bolt that like, oh my god, and spoiler alert, ultimately that relationship doesn't work out for her. The way that those two metaphors work in describing the two different types of relationships, I'm like, oh my god, I've seen this in my relationships, in my friends' relationships.
It's such a great analogy.
Nodding my head.
Oh, it's so good, because I've seen like myself and friends of mine be in those lightning bolt relationships, but they're often not relationships, they're situationships.
Yes!
I'm always
in lightning bolt situationships.
Yeah, and it's those extreme highs, the extreme lows, you like are infatuated. Like the lightning bolt is infatuation and the thunder is love. That's kind of what
well, the
I
thunder
think
is yeah something that grows slowly. I've not been in a relationship with someone where I saw them and I was like, bam, there's a huge spark as soon as I see you. It's grown to a point where you're with someone and you're like, wow, this feels ridiculous. Like
how did I not see it before?
Yeah, how did I get to this point? And that I think is like,
because it creeps up on you.
Yeah, and I always thought that's never
like thunder, like a villain.
That's never romanticized, though. The idea is that there's so much rhetoric around the soulmate, the one. You find them and you feel it. It's fate.
Like this instant, like, oh my god, I have to be with them all the time, and like that jolt of lightning that Tem feels around Karam.
Yeah, Karam, that for me signifies they're a fuckboy.
Oh god,
that for me is my fuckboy radar.
As soon as
I fancy them and I get the lightning bolt, I'm like, he's a fuckboy though.
I immediately called it, like, from the beginning, as soon as Tem, the way that she started talking about Karam and the way that she felt around him, like, from the first page that she's talking about him, I'm like, no, nope, like, that's not going to work. Like, I just don't know why. I just, like, sensed it. I was like,
So Tem is Steffi's best friend.
Yeah.
She's called September.
Yeah.
Which makes the song Wake Me Up When September Ends quite... Imagine if you were called September and then everyone sung that song at you.
Oh, God. I get that with Ruby by Kaiser Chiefs.
I just couldn't stop thinking about that. But yeah, September dates a guy who is a refugee. Well, he was a refugee and he's grown up in this country and he wants to like study to be a doctor and go back to his country. And he seems really lovely.
He's crazy accomplished, but seems like a bit of a prick.
Yeah. You know, like too accomplished, like so ass.
And he talks down on people. You feel him talk down on people. Yeah.
When I was reading it, I was like, this guy is going to go with this other girl and go to so ass.
Yes, he is.
And he's never going to buy from Starbucks. He's going to feel really good about it.
Use his keep cup.
Because
every
then the
day.
Other thing that we learn about Tem is that she's not academic. She is sporty. And basically what she wants to do is be an athlete.
Yeah.
And that's something that you see later on that Tem being like really insecure about. And I really liked that because I often feel like in YA, the main character, and I guess we do get this because Steffi is the main character, they're always very bookish and smart and introverted.
And that always grinds on me.
Tem
always.
Is the best friend who is the opposite. She's not really bookish. She likes running. She's not, doesn't get good grades. And she's extremely extroverted and loves parties and talking to people and like kisses lots of boys. It's very rare, except for Johanna in How to Build a Girl, where we see someone
represent.
Who is like the other way around, even though Johanna's actually very bookish as well.
But that always grinds on me a bit, and I know it's like obvious that an author,
it's like hashtag relatable,
do that. I get it, it's your lived experience.
And I think also like there's always a loud friend to bring out the obvious questions for a quiet like protagonist, where it's just like, are you feeling share this, Steffi? Yes. See, I see that because I'm the loud one. I'm going to literally voice what you're thinking and you're going to say, yeah.
The causes the plot progression out of their own mood swings and their own, their own extroverted journey.
Yeah.
Kind of guides like a subplot.
Definitely.
Yeah.
I also thought that this one was very different from Beautiful Broken Things in that with Beautiful Broken Things, I think that was, it was a rom-com about a friendship. Whereas this is a rom-com about a rom-com. And also, hashtag organic content, guys. We don't have a producer. Nobody pre-reads these books for us. We're reading them and we're kind of, you know, we've never read them before as we read them. So for me, I was reading this being like, does this have enough sex in it? Does this have enough gender in it for us? And then I get to it and I'm like, yes, actually, this is really about, this is probably the most romantic book that we've read.
Yeah. Trumpet.
Oh yeah, Trumpet, that's true.
Trumpet was very romantic.
But I realised it was all about bodies. Do you know what I mean? It was about love and bodies.
Communication.
Yeah, it was about how we use our bodies to communicate, and there obviously is some sex in it. But I don't know. I thought that was quite interesting that I was worrying for so long about how I was like, this isn't really about sex, and then I was like, actually, it completely is. Why do we have to talk about?
Builds up to it.
Yeah, we talk about jizz and boobs a lot on this podcast, and this isn't that.
It's romantic. It's about a relationship.
Yeah. So I thought that was really
nice as well to contrast it with like this is like. Young people having sex. I feel like we read a lot of like older people having sex. Nah, maybe that's not true. Or rape.
Oh yeah.
That's like our genre.
First time
YA consensual sex.
Yeah.
In the Banging Book Club. We did it. We made it finally.
We broke our own virginity of consensual teenage virginity.
Oh dear lord.
So I think it's for me it was like a little bit plotless, but also that's maybe because the characters just have quite a good time of it, you know. There weren't really any parents that I had too many problems with,
but that's what real life is.
Real life
doesn't have like a big climax and then like you know, this in three acts or whatever it is. Like that was just like people plodding along going about their lives.
Yeah,
the way that time passed in the book as well was very realistic. Like we were like, I think the book
loved how we skipped all
six,
the shit.
7 months.
Yeah.
It was a long time, even though you only get snippets of it and you're like, oh.
And they'd always get, you wouldn't get all the bits in between when you found out something was going to happen, in the next chapter it happened, like the event happened or the big day happened or the trip happened.
It was like Monday I liked and me and Reese organised to see each other on Friday. Okay, now it's Friday.
Skipping to Friday.
As an impatient person, I hate that Tuesday to Thursday period that you have to read about in the book. I don't give a fuck about that. Once you tell me what's happening on Friday, I'm going to skip to fucking Friday.
There.
Yeah. So for me, that was perfect. For an impatient reader, I whizzed through this book.
You'd be great in like one of those like trial reading groups when they haven't published the book yet. It's like, look, just delete Tuesday to Thursday. I'm not interested.
Oh no, I'm...
Save yourself those 20 pages, mate. Okay, so I want to talk first about this idea of voice and sex. So I know quite early on I made a note about, on page 20, if anyone's reading along, Tem is talking to Steffi and being like, oh no, you're a catch, you're a gem, anyone would want to date you. And Steffi's like, oh, but I don't speak. And Tem's like, guys like to kiss girls who can't talk. And I was like,
I missed that. When did she say that? Oh god.
I think she's being sarcastic and flippant, but I was just like, ugh. And then it got me thinking about this idea of like the Little Mermaid thing, where it's like she gives up her voice for sex. And this is kind of the opposite. Shit. Like she finds a sexual sexual interaction, a sexual relationship, and it gives her a voice. It's like quite the opposite of what Tem tells her. And it's like Steffi's ability to communicate with Reese, that kind of they're drawn together. But then they're also always in this big anxiety kind of spiral of like, do you only like me because I speak BSL?
Yeah.
Like, no, well, I think you only like me because you speak BSL. Like,
they're both very paranoid about that.
Yeah.
They each have that moment to be like, wait, is this the only reason why you're with me?
I'm always really impressed that Steffi doesn't get anxious about using BSL in public with Reese, because everyone around her says, are you aware that everyone's staring at you and stuff, which is like the stupidest thing you can say. Yeah, but she never freaks out about it, the BSL side of things.
I think it's because the way her describing it of being like, it's just her and Reese, and like
it's romantic, I guess,
because no one else is understanding what they're saying. It maybe it's slightly different, I don't know.
Yeah. And I think as well, so like this idea of body language, they seem to communicate in a quite a vulnerable way. I don't know. So yeah. I don't know how you guys felt about
it. Oh, she kept saying, like, I can't lie to him. He'll read it. Like,
yeah.
That.
Yeah. Oh,
so
my God.
To reading
so
each other's bodies rather than listening to what they say.
I really loved the way that the book was formatted in terms of putting in what they were saying in BSL. Just
yeah.
Just in bold, as regular speech, but in bold, so you knew that it was being signed.
Mm.
I just loved that. And then.
And there's lots of technology in it as well. There's lots of texting and DMing
yeah.
and whatever.
Yeah,
it felt really up to date.
It felt so fluid. It just felt like speech. And I thought that was really great. I would love to know about like the research that she did into BSL and things like that. Well, there's obviously all of the signs in the book and authored notes.
Yeah.
I didn't read that.
Author notes, she just says she's talked to a lot of people and she's read a lot of stuff about it and she's started using it herself. And it also gives you loads of tips on how to learn BSL. And also I think there's a bit in it.
All of
the
chapter titles as well, with the different numbers.
Yeah,
and what are these
called? Made me want to learn.
End cards, that's YouTube.
I've forgotten the word as well.
Inside the cover.
You've got the alphabet and also numbers in BSL. But one of my favourite things about the way that she described BSL was just in how much it's not just your hands, but your whole body and your face. Like, everything.
Yeah.
I really loved it.
When I was in school assemblies and there was somebody who might have been deaf in there. I think there was somebody deaf at our school. And the interpreter would have to come to the front and, like, interpret the hymns. Everyone was just staring at her. Yeah. And like when there was any announcement, everyone was just, it draws you in because it is, maybe we under-communicate really.
Would you ever watch them on TV when there's the
nice? Oh yeah, I love it.
And they've got such an expressive face. Yeah,
yeah, on Hollyoaks, yeah.
They watch Hollyoaks Omnibus on a Sunday,
yes.
But with the deaf
setting. Oh my God. Coronation Street Omnibus?
Yeah.
Oh my God. But also, I think it's somewhere in the book, it also mentioned how you have to be making eye contact when you're speaking in BSL.
Mm.
And often like, you don't necessarily use eye contact when you're speaking normally.
Yeah,
I also love the irony of the fact that we're talking about sign language and deafness on a podcast.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I know.
Someone write a transcript.
We need a show notes. How did you guys feel generally about the BSL thing? Because there was a bit that hit me quite hard when there was somebody who was commenting on their relationship said, oh, but you wouldn't learn that unless you needed to, would you? Because it's not like learning French where you can go to France. It's not like learning Spanish where you can go to Spain and talk to all those people. Like, why would you learn BSL if you didn't have to? And then there's parts of the book where Rhys is like, but I feel like I'm in this world that nobody can access.
Mm,
and it is kind of like Rhys has this country that nobody's really interested in learning the language for.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, because I was always like, oh, I'll never learn it. But to be fair, I don't know really anybody deaf.
Yeah.
And then that made me question my thought process. Because
it's
I was
really
like, actually,
tricky as well, because they're also like, BSL is British Sign Language, American Sign Language is different.
Oh God, that must
so
be such
every
pain.
Country also has a different sign language, which complicates things further. There's not like a global recognised sign language.
But that's why I think it's cool, like, I don't know, in the author notes, like, Sarah says that there's different, I think it's Sarah says, there's different syntaxes and stuff as well, and there might be, in the same way that with language, you wouldn't, like, you couldn't translate, like, a euphemism. Mm-hmm. It would be something else. Like, it's kind of like that with sign language as well, apparently.
Like,
I don't
it's
know.
Actually a whole different language. It's not
yeah,
just...
Yeah, yeah, it has
not
different rhythms.
It's not just a translation. It's an entirely different language. Yeah.
I wonder what kind of literature has ever been written in sign language. You know, like, you can't really write it down, I guess. So you must be able to.
Well, people can read.
People just write it in English. But then, like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Is there something we're missing? Like, what... Is there, like... Somebody tell me, is there, like, beat poetry in sign language?
Oh.
Like,
ooh.
You know, like... What's that? I don't know. It just made me think about a lot of stuff that has never occurred to me before.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I don't know. To be fair, it would have been cool if this had been written by somebody who was deaf. But at the same time, it's the first time I've ever even come across it in YA, so.
Yeah, I feel that way.
Do we want to talk about Rhys and this masculinity of crisis that I think he's having? It has been mentioned that he is going into the man cave that John Gray taught us about in Men from Mars. What do we think about Rhys in general as a character?
Oh, he's a bit lovely.
He seems like, quite flawless.
He seems like a teenage boy. He seems like a 16-year-old boy more than an 18-year-old boy. But then I think maturity levels obviously are different. But like the neediness...
Mm.
Within the relationship, I don't see that in any. But I didn't really get to know men on an intimate level. I mean, on like a like them in relationships.
Yeah.
Until I was in my 20s. Mm. So I don't know. But that felt, he felt needy. And that was the first thing I really picked up on. I've never had someone needy.
I
don't know
if I would call him needy. I think he was just very forward about his feelings. Well, except for the fact that he didn't have a girlfriend. Like, being clear about that. Mm. But I think once they both established that they were into each other, they were very...
It was very mutual.
About... I think the neediness was mutual, yeah. If there was any neediness. But he does kind of have his thing of, like, not being able to look after Steffi because he's deaf.
Mm.
And not...
That really
annoys
me. Which
is just totally not a thing. Like,
she does acknowledge that she's... Like, at the end, she's when they're sorting it all out, she's like, you don't need to do that. That's not a thing.
Yeah. Because because then also he just kind of, like, goes all quiet on her and weird.
Yeah, and he gets really sulky.
As soon as he feels like he's not looking after her or can't look after her, his masculinity is threatened, and then he's just
and
like,
then
retreat, retreat, retreat.
Well, the thing is, like, oh, I feel like I can't look after this woman. Oh, my masculinity is threatened. Now I'm going to really not look after this woman by not communicating with her.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah, he further sabotages himself on the level, ironically, that he chooses to say his...
But it also got me thinking about, like, this idea of, like, being really expressive with your hands and, like, how that is quite... Like, if men are really explicit with their hands... Explicit with their hands. Come on in. Expressive with their hands. And, like, especially people... Like, men have quite loose wrists. Then everyone's like, they're so camp. Do you know what I mean?
Like, there's
effeminate idea of, like, men moving their hands in really expressive
you're just
ways.
Making a generalization of men have looser wrists than women.
Have you ever noticed that men have really loose wrists? Oh man, I wish this was a video. I'm making some great shapes right now. That also made me think about, like, is Reese's masculinity always being compromised because of this idea of, like, men being quite unexpressive? And, like, quite still, and, like, with their hands, they're just supposed to use them as fists or, like, put them in their pockets, aren't they? They're not...
Mm.
I think...
I've not thought about that, but, yeah, I guess, like, gesticulating a lot is often associated with campness.
Mm. And then on top of that, having the huge vulnerability in his eyes of being deaf and not seeing when a car's coming, or, like, not hearing a car or in that... bit where they nearly get hit by a car and stuff like that. Like, I guess that those moments, he's like, no, I'm fine, and he's like a real optimist about loads of stuff and pushes himself to go to the new college, the new sixth form, and then stuff like that, I guess, is like all the insecurities come back up when there's a moment. And I guess that's exacerbated by the fact that he wants to overcompensate. This was a
no, that makes sense.
I agree. Yeah. I think we're all kind of like, I agree.
Yeah, it's the overcompensation thing. He needs a new outlet of his masculinity. Does he? Or should he just...
Video games.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe he wants to be a video games developer.
Study feminist theory and feel better about himself. That's not true.
Like, go and read some feminism. Interesting. Mm. And I think as well with, like, Steffi and her, like, thing about animals and wanting to be a vet, I think that's quite interesting because obviously animals don't communicate verbally either.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And it's also a very physical job.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But when she plays a role and when she wears a uniform, she's a lot... I don't know. The mute thing was really interesting for me because the only other time that I've heard it spoken about is with YouTuber. What's her name?
Jamie.
Oh, Jamie Joe.
Yeah. Jamie Joe's video on it.
Well, the irony is, it's hard to be a... Well, no, is it hard to be a YouTuber if you... Well, yeah, it is hard to be a YouTuber if you have trouble communicating, for sure.
Yeah.
But it depends on have trouble. You can have a... There must be a whole sign language community. Mm. There must be a BSL community on YouTube.
Yeah, well, the only... I know there is a deaf community on YouTube, but the only one I know is Ricky Pointer. So she's hard of hearing, so she can still hear some stuff, but she, talks in her videos, kind of like how Reese can talk, you know, in the book, like he can speak. And she uses, like, closed captions on her videos and stuff and makes loads of videos about deafness and YouTube and stuff like that.
This has made me think a lot about closed captions.
There is, like, a deaf community on YouTube. And she also made a video with a blind YouTuber as well,
I
think.
That's cool.
That's so cool.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So I think, like, as people who are able-bodied... We just often think, like, oh, I wouldn't be able to do... Or if I was blind, if I was deaf, if I was disabled in any way, all of these different experiences are cut off from me, and like that's not necessarily the case.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, no, you can still kind of do everything. And yeah, it's interesting, like, because Reese, it's not explicitly mentioned, but I assume that he's been deaf like his whole life.
Yeah.
I've always wondered how someone who's deaf their whole life learns how to speak, but then also how they read.
Mm.
So I like
had because this, you read aloud.
Yeah, I was having this absolute mind fuck because when I read words on a page, I can hear them being said in my head.
Yeah, I've got an internal monologue.
You can hear that with word.
Oh, I never.
If you've
about that.
Never heard words before, you've never heard anything in your reading. What do you imagine the sign in your head when you're reading it? What happens? Like, some, please tell me.
You've just blown my mind.
Like,
I don't know.
I know. Like, what? Oh, I need to know. Please, like, any deaf listeners.
Yeah.
Oh, that's not a thing. Oh, God.
I think as well, I don't know, it really made me feel, like, quite, like, humble and a bit shit because I was like, again, I think that these things, like, I know, I've always known BSL existed. I've never learned any because I thought, I don't need that because that's something to help people like that, in inverted commas, integrate into in inverted commas, the real world. Yeah. And that's a horrific way to think. And it's also like, why do I think that I don't need access to their world?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, why? I don't know.
Yeah.
It's really troubling, isn't it?
I remember in school we learned how to, like, sign our names and ask, like, how are you, and say please and thank you in sign language. And then also, when I was at school in America, when I was 4, there was a deaf girl in my school. And so we all learn American Sign Language as well. And so I the only thing I can remember is how to spell my name in American Sign Language. Yeah. But
again, it comes into this idea of integration because Reese says that he did go to a special school and then he wanted to go to a school that didn't particularly cater for him because he wanted to feel normal.
And challenge himself as well.
But it's also like, would we even need that? Reese seems quite fully functioning. Like, would we even need those schools if we all learn a bit more? I don't know.
Yeah.
When kids' minds are so elastic, like, why don't we learn BSL? I mean, why don't we learn other languages? This is a whole other conversation.
But my God, I just got back from Denmark and everyone speaks perfect English.
Yeah.
It's like, our country is so bad. We take it for granted that the rest of the world speaks English. We're so lucky when it comes to language and communicating.
Maybe in other countries, their sign language education is better as well.
Mm. Yeah, maybe. Let us know.
Yeah.
Can you speak the sign language of your country?
Or a bit of it, at least. Mm. Some basic
should
knowledge.
Learn some more. What did we think about sex in general?
In the book?
Yeah.
Or sex in general.
What do you think about sex in general? How's everyone's sex life?
10 out of 10. Pretty good.
Well, I think we're all quite well serviced at the moment, aren't we?
Excellent. Well oiled. Yeah, no. We've had our MOTs. The plumbing's been done.
Yeah.
Oh. That was a very mum noise.
You sounded like your name might be Mavis then. You were like, oh.
I am the resident prude on this podcast. I think we've all established that of all of you, all of us.
I've got thoughts about the sex in this book.
Go on. Thought me.
Okay, so I'm going to just list my thoughts and then we can discuss my thoughts and then your thoughts. My thoughts are that I found it strange, like for me personally, that they didn't necessarily talk about the fact that they were going to have sex before they got to Edinburgh, and then, like, literally the only mention of it, the only communication about the fact, like, oh, are we about to have sex, is do you have a condom? Like,
but also, like, wondering what the BSL for condom was, which was, like,
and
yeah.
And then she finger-spelled condom. I love that.
Yeah.
But I wonder what the BSL for condom is. Sorry.
Yeah. We're apparently it's similar for the one that we use for wank. Or maybe a roll down.
Maybe we'll find out. We can look.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
A pin to the top and then a roll.
Yeah, I found it strange that there was no, like... But my personal experience was that months before I lost my virginity, me and my boyfriend
You had the most responsible virginity losing experience ever.
Because
more on that next month.
I can't imagine ever having...
By the book, out 6th of April. Doing it by Hannah Wilson.
I can't imagine having had the communication skills within a relationship at the age of 17 to be able to... I think it's that being able to gauge that you're heading towards sex.
I was a bit mind blown. Maybe this is actually a normal experience for teenagers.
I thought you meant by your first sexual experience.
Yeah, I was like, wow.
That wasn't mind blowing.
The book, out 6th of April.
But in this book... I was a bit mind blown, but I'm not sure if this is the case actually for most teenagers, that they had sex without talking about having sex.
Think that happens quite a lot.
It just happened. Even before, like when they were planning the trip to Edinburgh, no, like, hey, so we're going to be in a hotel room together. Like,
Do you want to?
Are you ready to? Is this something?
I just imagine being too scared.
What if Reese hadn't brought condoms?
Didn't he buy them in the corner shop when he was buying the Lamborghini?
I don't know.
I think he was buying Lamborghini as well. She was like, it's like champagne, apart from it's not champagne. I'm like, love, did he buy you Lamborghini?
I didn't even think of that, but it's so classic.
Did he go into a corner shop and buy a box of condoms and a bottle of Lamborghini?
Classy. But also, all they'd done in terms of like sexual things beforehand was a lot of making out, which she described as really hot.
Can we talk about the hand job?
Yeah, and then that one.
Oh,
hand
that's
job.
So funny.
So accurate.
That is great. Can we whip out Whip it out.
I don't know where it is.
Because both the sex and the hand job, her internal monologue is exactly what my internal monologue would have been. Because my internal monologue when I was first doing sexual stuff was like loud and proud in my brain. I could not focus on what was going on. So my brain was like, what about this? What's happening? Ew, what's that? Like, that was my brain the whole way through.
And Am I doing it right?
Yeah.
Like, also, he just comes really quickly, but also he's a... teenage boy.
Yeah,
so
this made me laugh. And she doesn't get off really either. But
she literally just touches him and he comes.
Did she have any pleasure in any of that?
Oh no, he put his hand like on her jeans a little bit at one point.
And she was like, wow.
Yeah. But I remember that as well of the like, everything is so intense and exciting when it's like you and you're just like,
but also what the fuck? In the sex scene, right? It's a virginity losing scene and it was fine. It's two people in love. Having sex which was cute. It was all
and also you
can
find the hole for a bit.
The whole thing was so like, which
is great. But then she was all like, it was all right. And then like, then the next chapter is literally like, I had sex twice last night.
I know.
And she was like, and the second sex is better. And I was like,
I want to know what that was like. Describe it.
Yeah.
Extra features.
Yeah, maybe that's the deleted
scene. Did that
scene
have to get cut? Like, I'm like, where was that? I needed that. Yeah. I just wanted to know.
Does YA have to fit into certain, like, 12A, 15, 18?
This one, so what, they don't really have ratings, but a lot of YA publishers will write for older readers on the back.
Okay.
And this is for older readers.
Is it? Oh, I guess. Oh, this is the most innocent sex ever. Yeah. But then, actually, I remember...
It does involve... erection, semen.
Yeah. I started reading YA when I was like 8 or 9 because you always have. It's kind of like Cosmopolitan isn't really for like older teenage girls, is it? Like you're always going to buy up because everyone is aspirational. So I think.
Yeah. I was going to say when I was 11, I read Guitar Girl. If either of you ever read Guitar Girl,
Cherry.
Yes, and a terrible spoiler, a terrible, terrible overdose scene. And I was 11, and I was like,
that. And also
never
junk
going
is
near
really...
drugs.
That's what I think loads of people are paranoid, and I'm like, did you not remember? Did you weren't you there in the library when you were reading junk and like loads of all about drug taking? But like you've read her the Guitar Girl. She wrote a new one, the London is for us. London Before Us.
Oh, London belongs to us.
Yeah, that's so Sarah I took Manning. That proof because I was like, Sarah Manning's written another book after Guitar Girl 10 years later.
Oh my god, did you read Let's Get Lost?
London Belongs to Us.
Huh?
Did you read Let's Get Lost as well?
No.
Oh, can we just have a Sarah Manning appreciation moment right now? Great woman.
Okay. Yeah, but I think the point is, like, a lot of YA that we read at that age was pretty as explicit as this, if not more.
Yeah.
So I'd totally give this to a 13-year-old.
Oh, yeah. I'd much rather reading about that than about overdoses.
Yeah.
In terms of your thoughts on the sex?
Very, very, very tame. Internal monologue was the same as mine would have probably been. I'm trying to think, was there anything else I really had to say about it? Like, I thought that kind of... You're right, they should have talked about it more pre-sex. But then, I wouldn't have, and I know I wouldn't have.
This isn't supposed to be like a curriculum of how to do it, I suppose. This is like realistic literature. And I'm like, this is probably what happens.
Probably.
Yeah, and they're clearly...
But they like... I wouldn't know personally.
I was a good Christian girl. Didn't have any of the sex.
To Edinburgh and there's no like even like little jokes, little like euphemisms or innuendos.
Oh, he does something, doesn't he? Like,
they're both quite shy though, aren't they?
Yeah.
They're both like, ooh...
I know, I remember him making her making an accidental innuendo and then him making a proper one afterwards.
Oh, yeah.
So there is some kind of...
Yeah, but she goes red as soon as she makes innuendo. And she's like, mortified!
Well, you know, you can be ready for sex, but also not ready to talk in depth with your partner about sex, I think.
Yeah.
Mm.
Because you have to become comfortable with sex before you then have the language or are brave enough to talk about it.
Especially when you don't know what you're expecting. Not necessarily,
they don't have to go that way around. I don't think. You can do them either way around, really.
I think you need the knowledge before you can verbalise. Because for me, sex was just like a big, like, mystery area of my... Like, I wouldn't have even really known what... Like, for me, it was just very, like, what is this thing?
Yeah.
I don't know. And until I'd had it.
As well, it depends whether your partner has had it or not. So, when I lost my virginity, my partner had sex before. So I was like... Give me the rundown. Yeah. Like, catch me up. What's going on here?
Oh, okay. That's really good.
But I think with these guys, they're both, like, virgins, so...
Yeah.
I don't know. I think it's different.
What about Tem?
Tem.
Aww.
Tem and sex.
I love Tem as a character.
Also, Tem and Reese aren't white.
Yeah,
I don't think that's the only. There's not nothing's made of that. Yeah,
there's a funny racist joke in there as well. I mean, like, there's a funny joke where Tem refers to Steffi as a racist.
Steffi's listing all things.
She compliments her hair.
She's supposed to be like just making Tem feel better about herself, and she's like, "And you've got great hair." And Tem's like, "Racist." Yeah, and they both have a little laugh.
No, that's great.
There is one thing though that I wrote down about. So somebody says something, I don't remember because it was on page 24, if anyone's following along in their textbooks. Tem, something said to Tem about race, and Steffi doesn't speak up.
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember?
Yeah, yeah, she's remembering and that sports day, and she's racing, and there was, like, a racist woman in the crowd who was like, well, of course, because, like, they're basically implying, because she's black, then she's going to be faster.
Yeah, and then... It says something, either it says something like this or I've just written it down, but I said neither of them get to find out whether she would have spoken up. Steffi recognises that because of her selective mutism, neither of them get to find out whether she would have defended her.
Mm.
And that's like hashtag silent white privilege, quite literally.
Yeah.
So that's the one time that race, I think, came into it and was quite interesting.
Yeah. Other than that,
like, I think it was...
Reese is mixed race, I think.
And Karam is. Karam,
yeah.
Yeah, because he's a refugee.
Yeah.
From Syria,
yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. I think there was a lot of low-key representation in this that I was like, yeah, cool. Like, do you know what I mean? Not everything has to be a big exhibition and like, look, we've got some other people here.
Yeah.
I think it was quite nice just to have, yeah. So that's a side comment.
Still interesting, though, that the main character is the white one.
But then I feel like to write as a white woman from another racist perspective is very murky territory.
Yeah. Well, it depends. Like, she's an able-bodied woman writing from a deaf perspective. So, I don't know. I feel like in fiction, you can... People write from other people's perspectives all the time in fiction. It just depends on how good your research was.
Yeah.
Side note, for anyone's interested in that, I've just read Small Great Things by... It's a new book by Jodie Pickle, who did My Sister's Keeper.
Yeah, I know.
And half of it is written in the voice of a black woman. But half of it is written in the voice of a male white supremacist.
Oh, wow.
And it's told from both perspectives. And that's the only... And it's, I think she did it quite well. Again, willing to hear feedback from people who aren't white. But for me, I was like, this seems to be quite fair. And she did a lot of research. And she also, because she was writing from the other extreme perspective, and her point was talking about the different perspectives, I think that was okay. That was the time when I was like, yes, Jodie, I think you got this.
Jodie, I think, is a good writer.
Yeah, I'm not saying it's like a perfect book, but I was like... interesting.
But Tem and sex.
Yes.
Back on the subject, back on track. I thought it was really interesting that it was included that Tem is a Christian and also like a practicing Christian, like she goes to church every
week. Not like my mum's gonna tell me off having sex. She was like, I'm not gonna have sex.
And like it was Tem's choice to like not have sex before marriage, but also she has done a lot of other things. So we don't know specifics, but we assume...
Oh, man, we've all been there.
Lots of making out, lots of hand stuff, some maybe a few blowjobs here and there.
I come from, like, a background where, like, everyone was like, nobody's having sex before marriage, but everyone is doing everything. You know what I mean? Like,
which to me seems like a very, like, teenage Christian thing to do.
Yeah,
because, like, this is where this is the line that God drew.
Like, this is the house that Jack built.
This is the line, thou shalt not cross it.
Yeah,
but we'll dance, we'll stroke the line.
Yeah.
The line will be caressed.
Yeah.
And peeked over.
Oh yeah, a lot. But then it's interesting that she then has sex with Karam.
Yeah, and then Steffi's reaction to it is really mature as well.
Yeah.
Steffi's
she doesn't, I love that.
She's like, you weren't saving your virginity for somebody else. You were saving your virginity for you. And you spent it when you wanted to spend it. And I was like, Steffi.
I know. I love that bit.
And
that
bit about the hymen. God doesn't care what state your hymen's in or something.
Yeah.
Which I think is true.
And I love that especially both Tem and Steffi like don't punish Tem for like going back on her previous decision or choice or whatever. Like, she's now made a new choice and that's absolutely fine.
But
she is beating herself up about it. You see that internal conflict like on her face.
I think that's probably more because she thought that Karam was like the one.
Yeah.
And then he turned out not to be.
Karam.
Yeah.
I just always got pricky vibes. I think we all did. But I was like, I want you to be good. I want you to be good.
When he was described at the party and it was like, he was like this and he stood like this and he was like a man. I mean, he was very manly. And I was like, is this man really like, is it a plot twist? He's 25.
Oh, God.
So I was like, I think that the book came close to a lot of things that I was like, is this going to go horrifically wrong, like narratively? And it didn't. Actually, there's not that many consequences for most of the characters. That's quite nice.
It's a very different pace of book. We've kind of discussed this, we've touched on this, but like we in Banging Book Club read books that are quite extreme with YA, like especially we've read what would you say is YA that we've read, like about the
All the Rage.
Oh yeah, loads of
that literally peeled
YA.
The skin off my face. Oh my God. So like or asking for it.
Yeah, like asking for it.
And then Nina Is Not Okay.
Yeah, and Nina Is Not Okay. Like, these are quite intense YA books.
Nobody tried to shag anybody else's dad.
And that made me feel a little bit better. Sometimes we need a tame book.
Nobody lost a condom inside themselves.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, there was so much. This was quite refreshing, I found, because as someone that doesn't like conflict, I'm always quite like, worked up.
But that's why it's good, because I feel like this is, if you were quite an anxious teenager, this is the kind of Steffi is the character you need. And actually for that, you don't need a book that's going to tell you everything's going to go horrifically wrong, most of your family will die, here you go.
Exactly.
You need one that's like, the consequences were quite small, and actually Steffi achieved quite a lot.
It feels real.
There's like two topic areas that I want to cover. One, mental health. I don't, we've kind of talked about it a bit, but like kind of just
this
like
would be a nice segue.
Go into like mental health and relationships more, because I feel like often people talk about relationships in their own right and mental health in its own right, but never kind of like what happens when you have mental health issues and you're in a relationship. What happens when the person you're dating has mental health issues? Like that intersection of those two experiences, like what happens and how do you navigate those situations?
Because they're completely intertwined. Once you're in a relationship, or once you as a person with mental health issues is in a relationship with someone, that it's already a narrative in your life. It's obviously now a narrative in both of your relationships, because it's you, it's your mood.
Yeah.
And
I think
experience.
As well, like, it's interesting that, like, I think the only anxiety for both of them in their relationship was that the other person's needs wouldn't be met, or like that they both, and that's the only conflicts happened was when like Reese was like, you're talking to other people without using BSL and I can't understand what you're saying and it makes me feel excluded, and she's like, I am a selective mute and I managed to speak to a stranger, leave me alone.
Yeah.
And that's when, but then it's also like that brings them together, and that like mutual, not mutual dependency, but that mutual vulnerability.
Yeah, it's the fact she's getting less vulnerable,
yeah,
as opposed to she's getting more able, and it's freaking him out.
Yeah.
Is that, yeah.
And just, yeah, the way that mental health works in relationships as well, with when she, after her birthday, when she was going to sleep and she had that panic attack, and then kind of distanced herself from him while she was dealing with the repercussions of that panic
attack.
Did
she ever tell him she had the panic attack?
I don't think she did. Mm. And so it's like interesting things like that. And
he doesn't know she had the panic attack when he hurt himself.
Yeah, yeah, because she had the panic attack in front of him. So yeah, but she,
but I think she says like he's too out of it to know.
Yeah.
Because he's so in pain. Anyway, sorry.
Maybe. Mm. I think they do discuss it afterwards at the end.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that first panic attack that we read about in the book, like she very much keeps that to herself, like only her therapist knows.
Yeah. And she's on meds as well.
Yeah, which she keeps a secret from him and Tem.
But and that's not like the main feature of the plot. It's just like this thing of like, by the way, she's on meds.
It's good. No, but it's quite it's really clear. Good. It guides, it works in tandem with the narrative, like as like a theme of like, we start the meds at the beginning of the book and then here's where we end up in a couple of months' time.
It's also never promised that it's the meds that helped her.
Yeah, I like
that. But she's willing to entertain it. She's like, maybe it's because of the meds. Maybe
it's because of Reese.
Maybe it's
because of me.
Yeah.
Also,
it's SSRIs, isn't it? That's normally used for depression and bipolar. Yeah, SSRIs are like Prozac.
Oh, okay.
As opposed to beta blockers, which was what I'd expect, which are for physical feelings of anxiety. They like slow your heart rate down a bit.
Oh, I've always heard people saying they use Prozac for anxiety.
And I'm glad, because the people I've known who've taken beta blockers have not had good reactions to them, because they physically slow your body down. Believe me, having anxiety, a severe anxiety, and going through exam seasons or like school or university where you have to hit deadlines and do tests and stuff, honestly sounds like the worst nightmare from like my friends' experiences. It's like, and family experiences. Because you can't mess with medication when you've got deadlines.
Because the way that your body would fluctuate on them, like coming on and off or whatever.
I had a friend that just fell asleep in her exams. Like, she just failed everything because she fell asleep.
Oh, no.
I know. In all her afternoon exams.
Oh.
But hey, at least, it's interesting to see things working.
this isn't like, I think this is quite a healthy depiction of it. It's not promising that the meds will solve everything, but it's recognizing that they're there.
Also, and every time like she approaches
that,
it.
Yeah, and I like the way that the therapist is like depicted in this book. It's not a case of like at the beginning of that narrative of like finding a therapist and like having an awful time and not getting along with therapy and da 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 da. No, like she's already got this established relationship with a therapist when we start the book.
Yeah. And it's not friendly. It's not like, I don't know, it's a
It's like an in and out.
It's like, a doctor. It's a doctor.
Yeah.
But a doctor who, you know, they care about each other. But it's a professional relationship. And I like that because I feel like a lot of...
I love all those different moments, though, when Steffi's just, like, going about her life and accomplishing things. And she's like, must make a note to tell my therapist about this.
Yeah.
I love that.
Like, I think Steffi's really nice as a character because she obviously suffers with anxiety and she obviously suffers with talking to people. But I don't really think that her character is shy. Do you know what I mean?
She describes quite herself sassy, as shy.
But I think she's got this like proper, like she knows, she's not a retiring person.
She's not a people pleaser. She's not sitting there bowing down to everyone.
And that's why I think it's quite nice to separate that from it being a personality trait of just being quite quiet and happy with life and doesn't want to cause a fuss. Like she's not, she wants to cause a fuss. She knows what she wants and she can be quite
sassy.
She's
also ready to challenge herself and like push herself and stuff. And that's all coming from her and not the people around her. Like, her parents are the ones that want to kind of like limit her almost and be like, we need to keep you safe. Mm. Oh, that's one thing we're not talked about, grief.
Oh yeah. Gosh,
she's got her stepbrother died.
That is really...
And then her stepmom is like, got depression.
A really severe kind of depression.
Yeah.
The way it's described is like, it's such a long-term form of grieving. No one knows how long it will last. It's been 3 years.
Yeah.
Like, it can still go on. Like, oh my God.
Yeah, that was sad.
Yeah.
I don't know how else to describe that bit of the book except sad. Just, like, really sad.
And when she sees his friend in the pub. And that interaction, just how few words it is, but it says so much about their relationship of Steffi with her stepbrother's friend. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the last time they saw each other was at a funeral. And they're both really aware of it, but they both care deeply about each other. But not because they know each other well. Things.
Yeah. Again, I think, like, even when it's not about Reese, there's lots of, like, conversations where there's stuff that's not being said, but it's being said, if you know what I mean. Like, Sarah doesn't have to use very many words, but we know what she means. I like it.
Yeah.
Good work, Sarah.
Final thing is parental dynamics that I wanted to mention, and the university debate, where basically all of her parents collectively don't think she can handle university.
And she has four of them.
Yeah, she has, yeah. step-parents as well.
I don't think that's very realistic.
And I was
that's
like,
my one thing that I was like, I'm sure one of them had won.
The antagonistic mum, yeah, I can imagine, sure. But, like, also very belittling, patronising mum. That really got on my nerves. It's like,
the mum's not great.
But the fact they were all like, we don't think you can handle it. I guess they thought she might, the panic attack side of it, I guess they thought she might have a breakdown. But in terms of just the speaking, I'm like,
I know people that didn't say anything at uni.
Yeah, like.
Through choice, just because they were lazy.
Or they didn't do the reading.
That's parents, though. They think people do more at uni than they actually do. Let's not tell them.
And I mean, it's not an accurate portrayal of, like, uni, you can be silent. My whole degree could have been done in silence, for sure.
Yeah. Other, like, family things, though. Steffi's little half-sister,
Belle,
short for Belinda. My dad's not a porno anymore.
Yeah, I thought that. Blink.
Also, it's like, why am I thinking about Belinda blinked about this five-year-old? Like, it was really awkward. And then Tem's little brother, who I can't remember what his name is.
Oh, but, it's like Marcus or something.
But he wants to be a fairy. He wanted to, he cried because he was just like, I want to be a fairy like Belle. And then they got him, like, she lent him her wings. It was great. It was so
Lena's
cute.
Got a face like she doesn't remember this part of the book.
They went to the park, like, Steffi and Tem with their younger siblings, and then Tem's little brother was just like, I want to be a fairy. And they were like, cool, you can be a fairy.
Yeah.
It was really great. I liked that bit. It wasn't made like a big fuss of as well. It was just like, narrating it as if this is a thing that happened.
And I like how, is it Rita the dog?
Yeah.
Rita the dog is kind of...
her own character.
Yeah.
I want to believe that she was named after Rita Skeeter.
Oh, no.
Dog's then the dog would be, like, spying on you.
Oh, God.
Writing secret
That would
reports.
Be a plot twist. But I just thought I'd do a token mention of Rita the dog. Because I...
Shout out to Rita the dog.
It was a fun, well-formed character, even as an animal.
Yeah.
That.
Final thoughts. I really like this. I really like it for a younger teenage reader, I think. Just because I think it's safe enough that it introduces a lot of themes. But I think for me, it wasn't really like a big plot-driven book. It's kind of done with a few more plots and twists and things. I'm used to a lot more happening in a book.
Yeah.
So I think this is really, really great for younger readers. I think this is really well done. And actually, the more we talk about it, I realise how many different little things it hits.
Mm-hmm. It's a subtle book.
Yeah.
It's a very subtle book. But I like reading it. Because I love that feeling of when you're falling for someone, you got a crush, and it's just like, oh!
Yeah.
And you got to relive that in such an innocent, pure way in this book.
Yeah.
Like, the romance is pretty much untroubled, I would argue.
It's proper cute.
It's,
I mean, like, the worst thing happens is that some people break their legs, you know what I mean? Like, a few broken limbs. I thought it was going to die. I was literally like, that's the end of Reese. It's going to be like, what's that one day when she just gets hit by a bus at the end?
Oh, spoiler.
See, I thought it was going to be she'd get back and Tem had taken her own life. Like, that was my theory.
That's because all the books, like, we've read so far have trained us to be like, when does the death happen?
Yeah.
There's going to be a rape at some point.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah, this was my other fear. What if all the sex build-up became, like, a rape scene?
Oh, God.
No. Anyway, sorry. We're polluting this.
Thank you for... That didn't happen.
Great.
Thank you for restoring our faith in books. Sarah.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. This is a really nice read.
Question. Would you have sex with this book?
Yes, definitely. Assuming they were of age. They are.
I would have sex with this book when I was 16. But 25-year-old Hannah isn't interested. Like, she's into the more hardcore stuff now.
Yeah, I wouldn't relive the I don't want someone...
16-year-old Hannah will have sex with this book.
I don't want to give someone a 30-second hand job.
And I even like, say, I say hardcore. I'm actually quite tame, like quite vanilla, but like just hardcore compared to this.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, that was a virginity losing scene. It was fine.
Yeah. No, I would have sex in this book in terms of the early stages of a romance.
Would you lose your virginity to this book?
I would not have a 30-second hand job. Like, that's what I'm saying.
I would... not have sex with this book, but I would set this book up with a date with one of my best friends.
Okay. Aww, yeah,
I would be like, I'm not going to get laid with you, but I will definitely find somebody to have sex with you.
Would recommend to a friend.
Yeah.
Did you ever wonder if our parents listen to this?
Oh.
No, mine don't.
100% don't know what a podcast is. Yeah. I'm really not sure what we do.
I just wonder if I can imagine my mum listening to me go, I would not have the 30-second hand job in this book.
Putting this audio file on iTunes is effectively encrypting it for my parents. Yeah. Now they won't be able to access it because it's on iTunes. It's not happening.
Yeah.
Sorry, Mum, if you do ever get to listen to this. If you work out how, well done!
Yeah. God.
Oh, my God. Okay, so thanks for listening. Next month, we are reading...
Doing It by Hannah Whittaker.
Okay, you've completely peaked that, mate. We might have to redo that.
Oh, we've peaked.
Doing It by Hannah Whittaker.
April is going to be the peak. It's going to be the best book we've read. No. Oh, God. Yeah, I'm really excited for you guys to read it.
So. We're going on tour. Can we mention that?
Yeah, me and Lucy are... Sorry, Lena.
It's chill. I'll be in my office job looking at the lights and wondering really is life.
You're going to come see the London show, though.
I am going to come and see the London show.
So me and Lucy are going on tour for my book stuff, doing it live. London is sold out, but there are still tickets for Birmingham and Manchester if you fancy coming along.
And TBH, they're going to be our better shows because we've done it once already.
Yeah, exactly. London's the first show, so that will be shit.
Yeah exactly. Terrible.
But you've already bought your tickets, so sucker!
Exactly.
But we're basically going to be really funny and hilarious, and we're rehearsing tomorrow, and it's going to be great.
It's going to be loads of fun.
You're going to throw condoms at everybody.
Me and Lena and Lucy have got lots of banging book club books that we have read over the last year and almost a half that can't fit on our shelves anymore, and we wanted to do a giveaway.
Some of them even have marginalia in them. Ooh, so enjoy that.
Marginalia, yeah. Turned corners. Da-da-da-da-da.
So if you'd like to get hold of some of these books, all you need to do is go onto iTunes and leave us a nice review. Preferably nice. We'd like them to be nice.
Yeah, and what we will do is we will post on Twitter. We don't know exactly how many books of like each copies that we have, but we will tweet out all of the pictures and tell you how many we have and which books. And when you leave your review on iTunes, maybe put a preference for which book you would like and your email address so we can get in touch with you.
Yeah. And then we'll post them out to you.
We'll start with UK only for the time being, but potentially maybe international at some point. But right now, UK only. Sorry, international listeners.
Once we get sponsors for this podcast, maybe we can afford to send.
At the moment, we're literally doing it for free.
Yeah.
In fact, it's costing us.
Yeah.
This is so it literally is.
That all the what do people call
that
it?
The
notices.
Minute. That was all our housekeeping. And follow us on Twitter at Banging Book Club.
Yeah. All right, many thanks for sex listening, gifts. Lads. Oh, so we have a great Banging Book Club Twitter.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
It's good.
Yes.
Okay. Love you lots. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Really want a cheese cracker now.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.